This Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS. PCGS is the standard in the rare coin grading industry. Visit www.pcgs.com to learn more. Modern Coin Wholesale CEO Ron Javutsky has been a professional numismatist since 1984. With $200 in his pocket, he went to his first coin show and made a profit. From that point on, Javutsky has been traveling across the United States buying and selling rare coins. He's our guest next on the Coin Week podcast. So, Ron, how does somebody get started in rare coins at 15 years old?
Well, I started an interest in coins when I was about 8. So I started looking at my uncle's coin collection and started going to coin shops and decided that it was something I'd like to pursue and started going to the local bid boards and bidding on coins and selling coins on the local bid boards and flew to my first coin show when I was 15.
So did you get it handed to you in the beginning as you were learning?
It was very difficult. I remember pricing a coin to a dealer when I was 15 that I priced it at, I was incorrect and priced the coin $50 too cheap and told the dealer I made a mistake. And he said, well, you know, it's your word. I said, that's fine. I'm just letting you know and I'll honor my word and sold him the coin. And I thought to myself, I said, I better really get with it very quickly or I'm going to have my head handed to me very quickly. And it was a good experience.
So every coin collector in some capacity considers themselves a wheeler dealer at heart. But what differentiates somebody who just tries to buy and sell and turn a profit from somebody who really has a talent to become a coin dealer?
The problem with being a wheeler and dealer is you need to be a really great grader to understand how to wheel and deal. And the better grader that you are, the easier it is for you to work on very close profit and very tight margins. So you really need to learn how to grade exceptionally well to be a wheeler and dealer, in my mind.
It assumed to me that when you're starting out that you don't necessarily have the capital on the back end in order to get the coins that you know are fantastic. But you're probably picking from a smaller selection of coins in order to start building up those reserves.
That's true in a way, but, you know, the past fun show, knowledgeable European dealer, I was walking in by his case, and I asked him for a price on a U.S. coin, and he sold a U.S. coin for $1,200. It was worth $20,000. So you don't really need a huge amount of money. You need to know how to grade the coins, and by knowing what that coin graded, I was able to buy it for $1,200, so it doesn't seem like it was a lot of outlay to make a lot of money quickly.
You're known in the industry as one of the better graders. There's probably only 5 or 6 people at that top tier graders. How did you start developing an eye for series that would have been well beyond your means at the time?
Well, I was fortunate that some people have the ability, and I had the ability. Not everybody can be, you know, the best baseball player, the best basketball player, but if you've got the natural talent, then it becomes really easy. And fortunately, and I've figured this out over the years, I thought basically when I tried to teach everybody, everybody was the same. And as I've gotten older, I've learned that everybody's not the same. There's some people that are going to be world-class swimmers, and then there's some people that just are not. And my talent laid in grading rare coins.
So what goes into looking at a rare coin and deciding on its quality? Because it seems to me that if you have an issue like, for instance, a Morgan Dollar where there's 400 coins and 65, according to one service or the other's population report, not every coin in there is going to have identical features. I mean, it seems to me that grading has always been a give or take.
Well, it is, but then if there's 400 silver dollars graded 65, the first thing you've got to tell yourself is not all those coins are 65s, probably. So even the experts get them wrong. So the first thing you need to do is take out the 64s that are in 65 holders. Then you've got to take out the 66s that are in 65 holders and realize where the mid-range grade is and which coins are graded correctly. That's what my expertise comes in, and that's what I'm very good at. Because of my position when I was at NGC, I was a finalizer, so you would always have people, you know, walking the line one way or the other, and it was my job to make sure that they were correct.
So you're saying that essentially, like, to a skilled grader, that there's a little bit more fluidity to the grading spectrum than a collector just taking something at face value.
I would say that's correct. And I would say, you know, the amount of coins that are graded and that are out there, you've got to realize which coins are graded wrong too low and which coins are graded wrong too high. And it's a fine line.
I've always heard that it's when coins are graded too low, like consistently graded too low by a service, that it's essentially a confidence issue, that perhaps you have a younger grader or somebody looking at a coin and they're afraid to pull the trigger on a high grade if that high grade means that the coin might be worth considerably more money in the market.
Well, you've got to realize that the grading service has the responsibility of buying back the coins that are overgraded. So unless you're very confident in what you're doing and all of a sudden you grade a coin and you say it's a 64, let's say a 25 SP dollar, for example, 64, a PCGS is worth anywhere from $1,000 to $1,200, but in 65 it's worth $20,000. Most novice graders and most graders that are worried about their skill set would call that coin a four, and they do all the time, to where sometimes you look at it and you go, what did they do? This is a lock five. This is worth $20,000. I can't believe they did that. Now, that being said, there's a lot of times that dealers will buy 64s that are just 64s and try them for 65s because of the spread. So the dealer looks at the spread and says, wow, I want this to be worth $20,000. Not looking at the coin itself, but just hoping he can make the money. So it happens both ways. It happens with the dealers, and it happens with the graders.
I remember talking to some of the senior graders at PCGS a few years ago, and we were talking about the concept of resubmissions, especially for coins that are kind of noteworthy. And one of the things I was struck by is that I think most graders who are really, like, pay attention to what's going on, they have excellent pattern recognition skills. And so they tend to call these coins old friends as they keep coming back. Was that sort of the case when you were grading coins?
I think that's the case of any grader. When you grade coins, there's coins like the 25S is a perfect example, where there's this big spread and they just keep on hoping and wishing. And if they throw the fee at the grading service enough, they're hoping that it's going to happen. But what they don't understand is all they have to do is look at the coin. And there's coins that you go, you know, you don't need to send this in 50 times. It's never going to work. Just stop. And they don't have enough confidence in their own grading ability. I call it the greed factor, where they just look at the spread and they go, I got to have it, and they can't help themselves. So there are old friends when you're grading coins, but at the same time, if they just look at the coin will give them the answer.
So let's go beyond the numerical grade of coins and talk about the story that grade tells you as a grader. What is a coin that you would put in a 61 holder? What does that 61 grade tell you about the way that coin was handled?
61 coin typically is a coin that was, you know, not handled well, basically not taken care of, and it's a coin that still has the mint luster, but it's got a lot of marks, or it's just, you know, a lot of wear, but it's got that luster that just puts it kind of over the edge from that AU where everything's just wore out.
And we usually see this kind of thing with, like, classic type gold or...
Yeah, 20s are a perfect example of coins that have that, you know, luster, but they're just really beat to death.
Just a bank to bank, lugging them around, heavy coins, soft metal.
No one cared about them.
What about 65? What does that tell you?
65 tells me it's a gem example, and someone did care about it, and someone tried to preserve it, and, you know, maybe it got a little cabinet friction from being stored in a cabinet or flipware from being in a flip, and that's why it's not the higher grades of 66, 67, 68, and even 69 and vintage coins. So it tells me that someone's taken some care to it.
The great MS-65 seems to have changed in the perception of the industry since the launch of the third-party grading revolution, I guess, in the mid-80s. Why do you think that is, that when we look at gem coins, MS-65 might not be the first grade someone would look at if there's 67s or 68s in the market?
Well, I think that everybody wants the finest known. Everybody wants the greatest coin out there. And, you know, a 65 is a nice coin. I mean, it's a beautiful coin. There's some, you know, early gold coins that you'd be thrilled to have in a 65, but knowing that, you know, the ultimate grade is 70, everybody wants to dance with the beautiful, you know, the most beautiful woman at the party, and it's just everybody wants the best.
Do you think that was the case when, you know, Jim was basically the grade that everyone wanted, like for Morgan's?
I think it was, and I think that, you know, when I was a young kid, I remember buying a proof Morgan dollar, and a Jim example was worth $5,000. And I was at a coin show and I found one and I paid $8,500 for it. And everybody thought at the coin show itself that that was crazy to do something like that. And, you know, I was 16, but I explained to them that it was one of the nicest proof dollars I've ever seen. And it didn't really grade a 65. The coin was like a 68 on today's standard, and I knew that back then, even before there was, you know, the grading service. The coin later sold at Long Beach, we sold it for 13.5. So someone else looked at it and said, I've never seen one like this. I understand bids 5,000, I don't care. Now that coin's probably worth $40,000, $50,000. So by that person seeing that quality, even before the grading standard had evolved into what it is today, did very well.
So describe, like, for people who weren't around to experience it, what a major coin show bourse floor would have been like before third-party grading sort of revolutionized the hobby.
It was really like playing the lottery at every coin table. You would walk up to a table and there would be gem coins laying out, and no one really cared to the degree that they care today. And it was literally the most fun you could have in the business if you knew what you were doing. And that being said, I wasn't at the level that I'm at today, so it would have been much more fun today than it was then, but it was still a lot of fun.
I think today when you look at the smaller shows, you still see some remnants of that type of world, except most of the dreck ends up being ungraded at a low show. So
I would say that's true. But at the same time, there's still coins out there the same way that there was when I was younger. But you got to understand, when I was first starting out in the industry, I would do 3 small shows in a weekend. And you would just go to the next one and the next one. Now to have one good small show, there are very few, because now everything's done online, everything's done at the major shows, and people don't have, you know, the time that they did when we were first starting out in the industry. And the industry's matured to where everything comes to the major shows now.
And things coming to the major shows comes at a price. I mean, the price of rare coins has gone up tremendously in the past 20 years, even though the market does have cycles.
Correct.
So how does a coin dealer compete now when you have an internet where essentially anybody who owns a coin can sell a coin, whether profit motive is their goal or realization or not, where you have certified coins from the major services basically commoditizing them, and you have, you know, auctions which are as thick as phone books? How does a coin dealer rise above all that and sell coins in this kind of market?
Well, there's, you know, they can deal an exceptional product that is one of a kind, and it's something that you can only get from that dealer, or you can sell lots of rare coins at a very small percentage over and move lots of product. And a lot of the way that the coin business has been in the past, and even when I was a kid, and it actually turned me off to collecting, is they would buy a coin and then they would mark it up 20% or 15%, and it was too high of a margin. What I think the better way to do is change the way that the business has been run in the past, mark the coin up a small percentage, move lots of products, and get more people interested in our industry and buying rare coins, and let them understand that this can be something that they can enjoy and not be taken advantage of.
But isn't a higher markup necessary when you consider the fact that every time you buy a coin, I mean, dealers make mistakes too, and not necessarily mistakes like I buy a coin that's not a nice coin, but I buy a coin that nobody necessarily wants at that particular time. And you do sit on a lot of inventory, and it's a very cash intensive business. So don't you sort of need that spread?
Well, not really. We have, you know, if you're a very knowledgeable dealer and on top of your game, we don't sit on a coin more than 30 days. So we don't, if you make the mistake, you sell the mistake immediately and you move on. What dealers have done in the past is done exactly what you're talking about, which is run the prices up because of their mistakes and because of their bad purchases. But if you're, you know, I hate to say it, if you're a pretty good grader and you've got your skill set about you, you can limit that a lot. So what we do and what we try to focus on is the coin. So we grade the coin, you know, no matter what holder it's in, and we buy nice coins, and nice coins sell.
Are there any particular areas in the market right now that you think are especially strong?
I think some of the modern stuff in 70 is a little bit overpriced for the amount of material that's out there. A perfect example would be a 70-95W Silver Eagle. They're a little strong. They're priced right now, I think retail is, a fair retail is like 14,000. I could see them coming down to where they're 10,000, and I could see a PCGS one coming down to where it's 15,000, and right now they're trading at 20,000. So for me, I would recommend that people buy vintage coins instead of that coin.
And that was a coin that sold for like $86,000 just a few years ago.
Correct.
So one of the things that, you know, we've been trying to relate to collectors who are really intensely involved in modern coins is that although there's nothing wrong with collecting modern coins, collecting classic coins really isn't that much of a stretch financially or based on the amount of expertise you need to have getting into it.
I would say that's correct, and I would say that there's places that you can find. We have over 1,000 rare coins in stock, and you know they're priced, you know, at the levels that you can figure out what the coins are worth, and you would be surprised at how many coins you can buy for $14,000 if you're going to buy a 95W, and what the quality of the coins you get. It's pretty remarkable.
And also, as far as like sophistication in collecting, I mean, that's pretty much up to the collector. You can get as deeply involved in a series as you want to, but that doesn't mean that, you know, if you're going to collect Colonials, you have to know everything before you buy your first one. If you're going to collect bust half dollars, you don't have to know every Overton number before you make a decision that you want to give it a shot.
I would say that's correct. I mean, you can buy a particular nicely toned Morgan dollar that you like the color and it's a gem example without collecting the whole series of Morgan dollars. I think, you know, you could start with buying a CC dollar that's got great history, beautiful coin, comes in the GSA pack or can come in a PCGS or NJC holder, and you can get a great, great coin for not a lot of money.
So as a dealer buying back coins or buying coins off of collectors who are ready to divest themselves, what's better for a collector? Let's say you're looking at a collection of, you know, a collector on a budget, but a reasonable budget between, you know, $300 to $600 a coin. Small potatoes for guys who are selling $1 million coins. But Is it better for that collector to go into a series or to just go out in the market and buy the best examples of whatever it is, make sure that they're buying at a good price, but just high eye appeal, everything, diverse collection, or is it better to specialize in a hot series?
Well, I would first off buy what you like. When I was younger, I collected Liberty Nickels because I liked the design and I thought it was a beautiful coin. Then I went on to Kennedy Half Dollars. Now I collect U.S. gold coins and some world coins. It's whatever you like and what makes you happy. You've got to enjoy it. And I found that if you enjoy what you do, you end up becoming successful at it. So I would say that they need to buy what they like. Me personally, I like buying coins that are exceptional in grade. But now, that being said, if I saw, you know, nice $1,794 in XF45, I would love to own one. It's, you know, not everybody can own the finest one known.
Well, there is one at the finest one known is at the PCGS booth at the fun show this
correct,
year.
Correct. Not everyone can own that coin, but it's a beautiful, beautiful coin.
Was it price or just that there's only one?
Just
of them?
The price and, you, yeah.
Well, Ron, thanks very much for joining us this week on the Coin Week podcast.
Thank you for having me.